Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Review It Yourself. I'm joined by Paul from SP Film Viewers. Welcome, Paul.
Hello. Thank you for having me once again.
Pleasure. Absolute pleasure. And we've been waiting for this one for a while. Like, it's been in the pipeline for probably a couple of months since I was going through all the Halloweens. I've watched all of them and reviewed all of them apart from Halloween 6, which I don't know where I dare start with that one.
I haven't seen that one, so
the mask's slightly better than in 5, but the story, it's like a made-for-TV film. It's honestly absolutely awful. Like when people say Halloween Ends is the worst one, I'm like, are you off your nut? Like you need to go. Like people go, oh my god, Halloween Kills and Halloween Ends are the worst ones. I'm like, have you seen Halloween like 5, Halloween 6? Those are absolutely dreadful. So as you might have noticed, everybody, we're reviewing a Halloween film now. We're reviewing Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, the 1982 film, which, to be honest, I'd skipped it when I watched all the other Halloweens because it's not part of the rest, is it, Paul?
No, it's kind of like there's a bit of a backstory with this was the first Halloween film I ever saw, actually. So, which, even in retrospect, you're thinking, why did you start with that one? But it turns out it doesn't really matter anyway, because it's like it has nothing to do with Michael Myers. But when I saw it when I was younger, it was at an age where I was like, oh, I'm just kind of just watching it just to see what this is all about and like taking in. And I didn't really, I knew like looking at in video stores and stuff, like the famous like poster and stuff of Halloween and stuff, but not really knowing nothing about the legacy of Michael Myers and kind of stuff like that, obviously, from the time. So I was going into this kind of blind and not knowing anything about it. So I kind of like assuming, oh, this is pretty decent for whatever it's supposed to be. So I had no real concept of things. So I think that's kind of why it's stuck with me so much and why I do like it, as opposed to some other people like, oh, this is sacrilege, where's Michael Myers and all that kind of stuff, because of the other two before it.
Well, actually, for me, I mean, I've come to watch it after watching all the Halloweens. I tell a lie, sorry. I've saved Resurrections because I haven't seen it yet. And Ben said it was that bad. I was like, well, you're going to have to come and review it. so that's the only one I haven't seen. Seen all the others, and so I'm nearly there with the whole series. And I hadn't seen 3. I'd bought it. I've had the DVD months, and I thought, I'll watch it at some point. And then when you obviously reached out, well, we were chatting, and you reached out and said, oh, I like that one. So it's yours. I didn't know what to expect, but I remember, I think you were saying about if you watch it and remember it and just think it's not Halloween, just watch it and take it for what it is rather than, because I think that's, I was going to save this till later, but I think that might be part of the problem, that when it first came out, people were like, what the hell is this? Like, we've just had, you know, Michael Myers and Dr. Loomis.
Yeah.
It's time, Michael, you know, the whole exploit. I'm thinking, wait, what's going on here? But it was always John Carpenter's plan, apparently, to have this kind of anthology of Halloween films, wasn't it?
That's right, yeah. So, the idea of this part, Universal, was kind of like saying, right, which I think, it could be endless, really, like the possibilities of what you could do for like a seasonal themed thing of that, like, or Halloween stories, like, you know, like, say, something like Tales of the Unexpected or that kind of stuff, but in like long form of movies, that would have been pretty cool to think out. But yeah, if you just call if the film was just called Season of the Witch, then people wouldn't have a problem with it, but because it's the stigma of saying Halloween 3 at the start of it, so they expect that to have all the Michael Myers stuff and Laurie Strode and all that kind of stuff. But there we are.
Yeah, see, I mean, I so before we get on to what we thought, I threw out on Twitter or whatever, what do you guys think? Because it's one of those films where, you know, you'll know the type of film where, you know, if you comment, if you say, what do you think of this, you know you're going to get replies. So I'm pleased to say a lot of people I've collabed with came back, which was lovely. A couple of people I haven't collabed with, so if I mention your name and we haven't collaborated and you're a podcast, let me know, because you know me, I like to get myself around, as it were. So Cinema Trip Reviews, they put NGL, which I believe stands for Not Gonna Lie. Is that right?
Yeah. Correct. Yeah.
Thank God for that. I didn't want to get it wrong. I absolutely love Halloween 3. Even though it's completely separate from the other films, it still has that Carpenter feel and music. Plus Tom Atkins Do you swear on yours, or are you against swearing? Or
no, I swear. You, Sophie swears more than me.
Okay. And music? Well, I wasn't sure. It still has that Carpenter feel, the music, and music. Plus, Tom Atkins is the fucking man. And yeah, it was. We'll get on to that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can't disagree with you. The movie loot. Shout out to Carlo. If no one has ever listened to the movie loot, go on over there, because he somehow manages to do a really in-depth chat about a film, but it's entertaining. And if I tried to do what he does, it would just be boring as hell. But he, I don't know how he does it. I genuinely don't. So yeah, shout out to Carlo. He put, I think it's pretty darn good. Take Halloween from the title, which is pretty much what you've just said, Paul.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
And with it, all the preconceived notions from that franchise. See what I mean about Carlo? And you're left with a neat sci-fi / horror film. Yeah.
It's definitely like a sci-fi element to it as well, isn't it? If you think about it in the broader scheme of things. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's more like a Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
You know, Day of the Triffids. Mm-hmm. Even if you went more modern, and I'm not a massive fan of it, but it's similar. Very much like, it's gone out of my head. The Cornetto trilogy, the third one. World's End.
Yeah. Good point,
Very much in that ilk, because you don't know what's going on for a long time. You're thinking, what's going on? And we'll get to that. Shoot the Flick, who I don't believe I've had the pleasure of. They just put, it's actually a fun horror movie. Yeah, can't disagree with you. The Film Effect Podcast, what's happening? Because they've been on before. Said, love this film. Had a blast when we covered it a couple of years back as well. I'll have to give that a listen. I don't like to listen to episodes that other people have done on a film I haven't done, because I think subconsciously I'll parrot what they say.
Yeah, them. Yeah, or go, oh, yeah, and take the notes.
I've definitely done that before. I listen to that much film vloggers. I've definitely done that a few times. And I've got, oh, that's not my thing. The Nomads of Fantasy. I've not had the pleasure, but they put, that damn song is catchy as hell. Yes.
Yeah, sure it is.
It's Halloween. Do you know what I was going to do? I was going to, it doesn't matter because it won't come out, but I was going to, I tell you what, I might bring this out before Halloween. So it's one day till Halloween. And apparently, I've read in the trivia, they took the tune of London Bridge is Falling Down because it was royalty free.
Yeah.
So there you go. That was also, for all you royalty trivia fact people out there, that was also, this is going to go really depressing really quick. That was the code name for the death of Queen Elizabeth II. London Bridge has fallen down. There you go. God rest. Anyway, and the last but not least, Hank, not of a podcast, just seems to be in, from what I looked on, seems to be into horror films. But I didn't want to watch Halloween 3 because Michael isn't in it. I'd give it a go. Oh, sorry. No, that's my thoughts. That's all he put was, I didn't want to watch Halloween 3 because Michael isn't in it. Fair enough. But I would say,
Technically he is, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
But, so, I mean, he is in it, Hank.
For very briefly, but yeah.
Very briefly, yeah. I would say give it a go. I mean, if you're going to listen, give nothing else a go, listen to this podcast, listen to this episode, that'll do. If you don't want to watch the film. But I would say, kind of try and, like you were saying, Paul, like other people have said, like Carlo said from the movie Loot, just think of it as a different thing. Just think of it as just an 80s horror film and go into it as that and try and enjoy it. And it has that wonderful, like, John Carpenter feel. Like, he produces it, yeah, he doesn't direct it, but the music's there.
Music,
and I don't know about what you think, Paul, but I think music can, like, really elevate a film. Really do.
100%. Yeah, I'm a big fan of music as well as films, and having a score that matches the tone of the film and really, like, gets you in the feels, in whether it's an emotional sense or music is very important in horror films, obviously, to, like, signify, like, oh, some sort of terror build up in any form of sense, whatever, you know, someone's creeping around the corner. I know there's tendency to be for the jump scares half the time. There is in this, don't get me wrong, but that sort of, like, synth 80s score that it works in this and just, like, peters out through the film is just great. It's one of the aspects I like about the film as well, because it's just kind of sets the tone of what it's going for the 80s.
Yeah, absolutely. And it does it in that way. I think I was talking about this before, I can't remember what I was reviewing. I do quite a bit. We were doing an 80s film, and I remember saying it has that 80s-ness about it and that atmosphere that you can't recapture now. And good God, they've tried. You know, Stranger Things, it, you know, there's been loads of series and stuff like that have tried to have, try and capture that kind of feel of the 80s because it's all nostalgia. It's close enough, but far enough away from the technology, etc. That kind of, it's nostalgic. But for me, yeah, like the atmosphere is a big thing in this. Like, I just don't think you could fake it now. I think if a film like this was made now, you'd be a bit like, oh, it's a bit silly. It's a bit not really. I mean, the closest thing I'd say to this modern wise would be a film, say, kind of like Sam Raimi with Drag Me to Hell, that kind of thing, that kind of like a throwback.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
I mean, it's not that similar, but it's just that kind of atmosphere of like, you're going to have a good time, but it's also a bit silly, but it's done in the right way. The Pope's Exorcist was a bit like that. If you haven't seen that yet, it's well worth a go.
No.
Oh, Russell Crowe as the Pope's Exorcist on a Vespa driving through Italy. Oh, that's the stuff.
Top notch stuff there, sounds like it.
Oh no, it's like it's right. Anyway, also we've got comments from Pete from Middle Class Film Class. How's it going, Pete? Matt Spectro from Through the Multiverse podcast, not had the pleasure. And Joe Bridges. So I'll save those for later because you gave us kind of more in depth comments, and I thought, well, if I start with that now, kind of won't make much sense. So stick around for those guys because I've got, for once, and Paul's shocked as much as anybody else, I have got notes. So it hopefully will be a bit more structured than usual. And yeah, I mean, I like the tagline of this, which is, you know, the night no one comes home. Because it stands on its own as a good tagline, and it's also a clever link in with Halloween the night he came home. Or Halloween 4 poster, which is 10 years ago, Michael. He changed the face of Halloween, tonight he's back. Not as catchy, but what can you do? But the plot of Halloween 3, because I've actually got the DVD cover. The start of this is really weird. When a terrified toy salesman, this is frightening already. is mysteriously attacked and brought to hospital, babbling nonsense. Very British. And clutching the year's most popular Halloween costume, an eerie pumpkin mask, Dr. Daniel Chalice is thrust into a horrifying nightmare. Working with the salesman's daughter, Ellie, he traces the mask back to the Silver Shamrock Novelties Company and its sinister founder, Connell Cochran, whose deadly intent is to revive the ancient Celtic rites of All Hallows Eve, Halloween, and unleash a night of mass sacrifice across the land using his evil Halloween masks. Horror master John Carpenter presents the third chilling installment in the terrifying Halloween series. So there you go.
Yeah, I was just looking in the back of mine that I've got I imported the 4K from the United States.
Legally imported.
Genuinely was. I think it was through a seller through eBay or something. But so they imported it from them, and I got it for them. So for a good price as well. But yeah, it's kind of what you've just read out is kind of sort of the similar, but more like truant. I think obviously you've gone more in depth with what you've just described. There's kind of like keywords that you've just read there, and it kind of reads the same way. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. It's kind of like, I guess it's kind of obviously from like an. Is yours a Region B DVD?
I think it's for Region 2, I think.
Region 2, that's UK one.
Just the classic.
Yeah.
The reason why there's no cases, because I have one of those big cases, so yeah. I keep these. Because I think it's funny, because sometimes the DVD or Blu-ray, you know, 4K or whatever you're watching, they have like really strange DVD, like they don't sell the film, or the spelling mistakes and stuff, which is always good fun. But the cover of yours looks absolutely lovely because that's.
I think I've
seen you post that before.
It will have been one Halloween, I'm sure. But yeah, it's like a commissioned artwork for like, because there's like, it's in this hard box and it's kind of like ones that is like the similar ones with the Michael Myers and stuff. So I've got one to five as part of the set. I haven't got six H2O and Resurrection yet. But when I've got some spare money to throw around, I'll probably get those at some point.
I mean, I hope Halloween 6 has good artwork because there's no other reason to buy that one. Okay. And as we said earlier, the music, but I mean, the intro, is similar but different. You know, you've got this awesome synth theme. You've mm-hmm. got the computer, you know, making what we don't really. I mean, it's pretty obvious, but it's making the Halloween with, the pumpkin with the eyes and the smile, and you think, oh, this is going to be pretty good. The film written and directed by Tommy Lee Wallace, who actually was offered Halloween 2, because John Carpenter kind of didn't want to direct that one. But Tommy Lee Wallace didn't want to do it. Eventually it goes to Rick Rosenthal, who returns to do Halloween H2O, if I remember rightly.
I'm not sure about that. But probably right. Yeah. I don't know all the directors who did or worked on the Halloween series, but I know Tommy Lee Wallace did this, and he also directed, his other notable film was It. I did look that up.
Oh, the 1991.
The Tim Curry one, yeah.
Yeah. Ah, cool. Again, John Carpenter and Deborah Hill return to produce the film. And it starts off Northern California, October Saturday the 23rd, which is actually chronologically correct for 1982. So fair play to them for that. And one thing that struck me right at the beginning is, why is there always a bloody noise-sensitive dog? Whenever you're trying to escape somewhere, like the guy's like walking around and he's like, he gets to this kind of a gas station type thing, and he's trying to get away from these men in cars with suits. Mm-hmm. And this, I mean, looking back now, having seen the ending and knowing what these are, it's like, it is very Body Snatchers, very, you know, it's very of that ilk.
Definitely.
But I like the way he escaped, because one of them is choking him and he pulls away the car block. Why only one of the tires is blocked, I don't know, but I don't care.
It's very, very slow demise, a bit like the Austin Powers thing, isn't it? The steamroller.
Yeah.
Coming.
No. Yeah. And then, I love the fact that the car just like stops at the guy's shoulders.
Yeah.
Actually, that makes sense, because he's not a human, is he? So, spoilers. So, because when I first watched it, I was thinking, why is that guy's a whole shot? Because if a car hits you, even at that speed, I mean, there's going to be some crushage involved, right?
Yeah. But it just kind of goes, kind of gives up.
He barely looks at it, does he? He just runs towards it, and he's just like, I mean, obviously it makes sense later on.
Yeah.
But you're just like, are you not going to like look at the fact there's a car rolling towards you? But, you know, what can you do? Then 1 hour later, because there's like, what do they call them? Is it intertiles or intertiles? Whatever they're called.
Yeah, I guess. You mean the things where it like tells you like where the location is? Yeah. And stuff. I don't actually know what the term is, but I guess it's just I don't know.
It doesn't matter. Why is it when you're doing something like this, why are you doing the most random things pop into your head? And you think, people aren't going to find this interesting. Just get on with it. 1 hour later, the first time, apparently 14 times they play this song, apparently. I didn't count.
Neither did I, but yeah, I can imagine. Someone did.
The Silver Shamrock Novelties, The Three Masks, like, it's 4 days till Halloween. It's 4 days till Halloween. You get the glow in the green, the glow in the dark skull, the lime green witch, and the fluorescent pumpkin. And apparently, the first two, the skull and the witch, were already,
designed. Yeah. So it was like commissioned by, put it down somewhere. Dan Post was the creator of the masks, but yeah, he helped kind of like push on the pumpkin design one for his work. So.
Yeah. And the security guy, towing guy, whatever he is, he's sat in his office just minding his own business, and the thunder's crashing behind him. And then this old guy who's just escaped from, I like that. I've meant to say about the opening, the guy just runs out of nowhere. Like, I quite like cold openings like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you know, when you just, you're right in it, and you're like, okay, someone's fighting for life.
Yeah, what's going on?
What are we up to here? Yeah. Rather than, you know, somebody sat around a coffee table like, how are you doing, honey? Do you want a coffee? And I'm like, I'd sooner just get right into it. The guy appears, frightens the life out of the security guy, and he's like, they're coming. And he has hold of one of the masks, a pumpkin one. Mm-hmm. And then we flash to the hospital. And again, I don't know whether they meant this on purpose, but the nurse says to the doctor, Dr. Danny says, doctoring and drinking, that's a good idea. And I'm like, yeah, that's quite a trend. We saw that in Halloween 2 with nurses going off for steamy hot baths and all sorts.
Like
yeah. Well, there was that old guy who was drunk doing surgery as well, the one who he's sat in that room and he's dead.
Oh, before that though, obviously we get introduced to Dr. Dan Challis, who's Tom Atkins, and he's going to see his kids, isn't he? He's like, "Oh, I've got some masks for you," and then these
the crappiest shit, like 99p ones with a little string. Yeah, I was like, "Oh, thanks, Dad, you bastard." I didn't get me a normal one.
Yeah. Which of the masks do you like? Do you have a preferred one out of these three?
I quite like the pumpkin one. I like the way it's designed. To be honest, that'd be one I'd get if I could do. But I just like the way they look. Sorry. Yeah, what about you?
Yeah, I think it's the skeleton one. I think is the best one for me. I think really I like the most. Yeah.
These pop up again in Halloween Kills.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Anywho, so yeah, the guys like they're going to the old guy in the hospital is like, "They're going to kill us, all of us," and then the doctor's like, "Just stick a needle in him, get him to sleep." In doctor speak, and then the doctor and nurse, you know, smack each other's ass in that harmless 1980s workplace it's all consensual. It's just, you know, you wouldn't do it now. So in the hospital, because this was the only bit where I thought, "Oh, is this going to be a bit too Michael Myers-y?" I didn't want to mention him in the actual film review, but it's the bit where you get those shots from behind the guys in the suits in the hospital. And maybe that's because I've seen Halloween 2 not long ago. Maybe it's just in there and subconsciously because it's Halloween.
Yeah.
But I was thinking, "Oh, is this what it's going to be?" Because this is a bit too close to the bone to Halloween 2.
Yeah, and also because it's like quite an empty-ish hospital as well, again, like Halloween 2 was. Yeah.
I know, what is it with America in the 80s and these really badly staffed hospitals? There's like a nurse, a doctor, you know, and you just...
Yeah. Skeleton crew, yeah.
Yeah, the graveyard shift, literally. I did like the fact, you know, the guy's asleep, the old guy, and one of the guys in suits appears, and he starts to, like, poke at his eyes with his thumbs, and then it cuts away. Which, to be fair, I didn't mind because I can't stand those kind of scenes. You're not talking 28 days later here, by the way, or 28 weeks later. but you end up with, they do it, they imply the violence. So, like, the guy walks away and wipes, I don't know why, because he's a robot, but he wipes his hands on, like, the hospital divider curtain thing.
Yeah, I don't know why he does that, really, because it's like, well, especially what happens after the fact. Because he was caught, he's like, "Oh shit, I've got to get out of here," kind of thing. But it's like, yeah, someone's not going to notice some blood on the curtains, are they?
Well, yeah, that's the thing. Given that he walks outside, sits in the car, pours petrol over himself, and lights himself on fire, it's a bit like, oh, I mean, was the hand wiping necessary? Were you worried about contaminating some doorknobs on your way out? Anyway, I don't know. but I've got to be honest, right? The scene where the nurse is screaming, she goes and obviously sees the guy skull crushed in, apparently, which we don't see, which I don't mind. The doctor runs down the corridor. Now, I did just recently see Matthew Holness reading one of his books, on stage. So that's probably why. But I couldn't help but think of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, if you've ever seen that.
Yeah, yeah, a long time ago.
When he's running down the corridor, I was like, oh, no. Like, I was thinking, oh, no. As Dr. Challis runs down the corridor after the murderer. But to be fair, in my notes, I have got after that bit where the guy blows himself up, my notes are, what the hell is going on? Because you just don't, it doesn't...
Yeah, explain anything, which no. is... Yeah, keeps you intrigued though, in a sense.
Yeah.
Some people are like, "What the hell am I watching?" But at the same time, it's kind of like, I want to know what's going on. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the whole thing.
Yeah.
Sorry, go on. No, it's that. Yeah. No, you. No, it was. That's what I mean. It's like you're not bored watching it, and you're not annoyed. You don't know. It like gives you little bits, and you're trying to figure out. Because I was trying to figure out, are they possessed? Is it a cult? And I'm thinking, dear God, not another cult in Halloween, but. Anyway, and then I was thinking, what is going on? Like, what, like, but you want to know, like, the music and the characters. There's a bit of feedback later on about the characters, but I thought the characters, I was on board with the doctor, didn't feel we really needed anybody else, to be honest. Like, obviously, didn't need anybody else with him. I mean, he has, what's her name? Ellie Grimbridge.
Yeah.
What a name that is. So, yeah, I mean, So we got Sunday the 24th. Ellie Grimbridge. It's hard to say that. She turns up to identify her dad's body, and he's just. And to be fair, I was glad she didn't scream or anything. She just put her hand over her mom and was like, "Oh God."
Yeah.
Because God knows what she was looking at.
I think it was like a. It did. I think it did show like a prosthetic, like on or certainly on the. There might be a high quality version, but it kind of does show like them. It looks like a obviously a rubber mask, but when he is kind of crushed his head in or whatever he does with the eyes, and it does look like a very obviously a mask almost, which is kind of ironic because it's a film about masks. Mm. But again, she doesn't go, "Oh my God," or anything like that when she sees it. So it's, yeah, plays it kind of like, you know, just a shot, silent shock type of thing.
I imagine if you reserved. Saw something like that, you'd go into shock, wouldn't you? I think majority of people would. Wednesday the 27th, Dr. Chalice talks with the Dr. Dan Chalice, our main character. Yeah. He talks to the coroner's assistant, who he appears to have a dalliance with. He seems to be it's his ex-wife.
Ladies man.
He seems to be a ladies man, you know.
Yeah.
In a not in a creepy way, in like, you know, a proper way. Friday the 29th. Basically he goes to the coroner's assistant and says, she's like, "Look, it's nothing to do with me. To do with like the coroner." And he's like, no, can you like do a rush on this? Because there's something going on. Like, I just, anything you hear, let me know. Mm-hmm. A bit like the scenes in The Fugitive that you have. But anyway, I'm making lots of comparisons then. I don't know why. Probably because I enjoyed the film. We skipped to Friday the 29th. And I've got to be honest, I was not expecting to see an advert for Halloween, the immortal classic. Mm-hmm. And then you've got brought to you by Silver Shamrock. Two more days till Halloween.
I was the first instance when, I don't know if I really twigged the first time I watched it, but like the fact that it says like the immortal classic, then the giveaway at 9 o'clock, I'm thinking, I mean, and especially you're wanting the kids to stay up till like that time, and I think Halloween's supposed to be an 18 rated or R rated film, and it's like, unless, oh no, wait, that's tell lie. They probably did a TV edit, didn't they? I think they did.
They did.
Yeah, yeah.
Because didn't John Carpenter have to film another more scenes during Halloween too, or?
I know he did for two. I can't remember if there must have been a TV cut for Halloween one as well. So that kind of explains that. Actually, thinking about it, yeah,
makes sense.
Yeah,
because the soundtrack is pretty much constant. That's not a bad thing, but it's pretty mm-hmm. much constant. Because when it started to go into the Halloween one, I was thinking, hang on a minute, that sounds like and I was like, it is the Halloween one. Mm-hmm. Then you've got the immortal classic.
Heck, yeah.
And then the guy gives the classic Halloween, like in the other Halloweens, it's kind of like, what's the line? It's like, "Hey man, everyone's scared to one, everyone's entitled to at least one good scare. It's Halloween." Yeah. Whereas in this, it's like, "What's the matter? Don't you have any Halloween spirit?" And I was like, yeah, I could see it feels very much like it probably wouldn't have felt as much like a companion piece if they'd have kept the anthology going.
Sure.
But I do like the idea. I do think it's a shame that, I don't mind the other Halloweens, but it would have been nice for the same team to go, "Actually, no, we're going to make another one," because this story is interesting. So I would have liked to have seen where they went with these standalone stories. That would have been quite interesting, really, but never mind. It is what it is. Then I put Dan's ex-wife must be getting really pissed off by now, because all he does is ring her and goes, I mean, to be fair, when the first time he's just seen like one guy kill himself. Well, robot blow himself up and a guy get killed. So fair play to him. Like, he's having a rough shift.
Yeah.
But like, and he's like, I can't pick the kids up. Fair enough. It's fair enough.
Yeah.
But after that, he's just like, I can't pick the kids up. Oh, I can't come over.
Making excuses.
Like I'm going to, and he's like, and you're like, oh, come on. Like, well, you started to understand why it's his ex-wife, presumably.
Yeah.
Which I don't mind. Cause I think if it had been, cause at the start, I wasn't sure they were divorced. And I was thinking, oh, he's a bit of a, like, he seems to be interested.
Yeah, that's what I thought when I first saw the film, thinking, why is he not spending time with his wife kind of thing? But then I think I must have bypassed the call when the hospital was, oh, that's my ex-wife type of thing. Just overlooked that the first time I watched it. But, yeah, obviously it's sequentially after that, because I'm thinking, like, where it goes, thinking, hang on a minute.
Well, yeah, he's like smacking nurse's ass. She's smacking his ass back. Just got to point out. You know, he's like going into a motel with what's her face, Mrs.
Ellie. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's it. So they decide to go to the factory. He decides to go to the factory where they make the mask, which is Santa Maria, home of Silver Shamrock Novelties, where Mr. Cochran's the owner, like the father of the town type thing. Oh, and there's that scene, which I didn't mind. I was like, go on, son. It was the bit where, oh, to be fair, she instigates it, but it's the bit where he's like, oh, where do you want me to sleep? Like, I can sleep in the car, in bed on the floor. Yeah. And she's just like, where do you want to sleep, Dr. Charles? Yeah, go on, go on.
It was something like that. Where would you like to sleep? Like, that's a stupid question. And then
Well, that's the thing, right? Because I thought they got down to it then, but then later on they get down to it again, and he's like, "How old are you?" And I was like, "Eh."
I know, yeah, like, it's what? A bit, a bit too late to be asking the question like
she's
that.
Like, she looks at like 20 odd. She doesn't look young. So I was like, well, "I don't even know why that's there."
Mm.
It just felt a bit out there. But you know, maybe we're looking at it with more modern eyes. I don't know. It was just a bit strange. I thought, well, did you not earlier? No, whatever.
Yeah.
And I thought, or maybe it's more modern. I thought like motels you had to give ID and stuff, but maybe I don't know. I've never been to one. Mm. We meet a couple of other characters. We meet that woman who is a businesswoman, and she's like fuming. Or the businesswoman is fuming because they've cancelled a meeting or something.
Who is in fact Tom Atkins's real wife, or was really? At the time. I don't know if that is the case. So it's kind of funny that obviously like later on when he's with Ellie in the room and it's like his wife's right next door, technically.
Bit awkward.
But thought I'd throw that in. Yeah.
Nice one. Did not know that one. And it's like it comes and this again adds to the intrigue. You end up with like this speaker, because it's a small town, really small town. The kind of small towns only America has, you know, like two horses in a barn type place. And it just comes over the tannoy. It's like something from One Flew Over. It's like, it's 6 p.m. Curfew is now in effect. Please confine your activities to your own home. Have a nice evening. It's like a slightly nicer Purge, if you will. It's like, where's this going? Which I like it's not, I don't think it's completely mad. I mean, it does go that way towards the end, don't get me wrong, and we'll get there. But it's it is very like, what's going on here? We see a Cochran, I don't know what that means, brought in outside. So this homeless guy says to the doctor,
when he's doing the, obviously, like, it's supposed to be curfew, but the store's still open to get booze. So, like, how does that work? With the, you know...
Oh, is that where he'd been? Right.
Yeah. So, done the curfew. Said the curfew, and then shortly after, Dan's going to the thing to get some booze, and then he sees the homeless guy, and it's like, what about this curfew?
Because the guy's like... Oh, fuck Mr. Cochran. I'm going to get 10 barrels of gasoline and blow the whole place up. And he's like, I hope you can hear me. And it's like, what are you, can I? Oh, yeah. And most 80s phrase ever. He's like, hey, man, I got no diseases. Can I have a drink of that? And you get, it is quite funny. But I suppose it would have been even different if it'd be like, it's 6 p.m. Curfew is now in effect, unless you're at the liquor store, in which case, grab your liquor. And go back home. Have a nice evening. The homeless guy says, oh, Cochran brought in all outside people from the factory.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking, you know, are they aliens? Are they, I wasn't going to say Oompa Loompas, but has he done like a Willy Wonka and brought them from another planet? Like, what's going on here? Like, you know, because why is he not employed everybody in the town? Because like the motel guy, Mr. What's-His-Face, I can't remember his name. He's like, oh, yeah, he's the father of the town. We're all here because of him. And it's like, all right, okay, well, you're getting picked. Well, he's clearly like an accomplice, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah. You kind of get those. I don't know if you've, I think of like sort of like Children of the Corn, or like maybe even Troll 2, where it's kind of like, again, like a one horse town kind of thing. When it's all, you see the driving in and a couple of the people like staring out as they're driving him to the motel or whatever. So that you're there all kind of in on the secret.
Well, I was thinking about kind of like House of Wax or No Vacancy, you know, films like that where like they're set in a motel or they're set in a town where, you know, the curtain twitch your brigade out and yeah. looking up, yeah. you know, wondering who you are and type of, even a little bit of like Texas Chainsaw in there. Mm-hmm. So it is, again, it's intriguing. And I was reading some of the reviews about, which I don't usually do. Some of them were saying, oh, it's nothing you haven't seen in a million other films. And I'm like, yeah, it's not. You can't say it's groundbreaking, but it is intriguing at the very least and enjoyable. It's not boring. There's a lot to be said for a film that does a simple story and does it well, then goes a bit mental at the end, which I quite liked.
Yeah, because at the same time, it's like, yeah, sure, it might be the same thing you might have seen, but you don't necessarily know what the secret is behind it all, really. Yeah, you don't know that yet. So,
yeah, no, it's pretty cool. I enjoyed it. You've got the homeless guy. So two suited men appear and rip his head off, literally.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, they just drop his body, blood spurts away, and they just stood there like, yeah, another day in Santa Mira.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's that one started. You get, so Dr. Dan rings up his mate in the coroner's office, and he's like, mm-hmm. oh, well, what have you found? And she's like, well, I'm not going to do any more American accents. Mm-hmm. She's like, oh, I think someone's tampering with this, which is a possibility. You don't know what's going on. I can find like plastic and metal shavings. And at this point, I was thinking, is it robots? Is it what's, she can't find any bones or anything. Yeah, I mean, how about yourself? Like, when you first saw it, what was your like line of thinking?
I don't know. I feel like they did seem kind of robotic in a sense, or they're very like stiff and autumnal kind of thing. But I guess I didn't really like go, oh yeah, they're definitely robots. I think because they're the stone faces. I've kind of seen in other films where the kind of people are kind of like that way. I mean, I didn't see them like the Matrix, but on this watch, I'm thinking they're kind of like an early iteration of Agent Smith kind of thing, that kind of like stone cold, yeah, you know, just killers and just on a mission to do the job, really. But they're not pretty just, you know, quick witted and stuff. In fact, they don't really talk at all, do they? So it's kind of just, they're just silent, obedient.
One of them drones. Sneezes.
yeah. Aside from that.
I mean, that they come across as very kind of. I was thinking they were possessed for a lot of the film. I was thinking, oh, they're possessed. Is it, you know, are they under some, you know, a bit like Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom? Are they under a kind of trance? Is it, you know? But as it gets further and further on, you think, no, it's not. And then, and again, the next bit, the doctor and she gets out of the shower and basically just shows the doctor everything. And can the doctor see me now? She doesn't say that. She should have done. It would have fit perfectly. And then, although I suppose because she's on the hunt for her dad's killer, it might have been a bit much. Anyway, they turn up. They don't turn up. So they end up in bed, like just laying on the bed. And she like, the doctor's just like, because presumably he's driven and God knows how far it is. It's America, isn't it? Like a 15-hour drive to Charlton for them, bless him. And he's like, are you not the least bit tired? Which made me laugh out loud. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, that's it. And I was thinking, she's not tired, doctor. She's voracious. Like, she...
Yeah. There's something I want to... Obviously, I think, on retrospect, but we'll get to that later on, I think, about that line, where it comes up. But I'll try and remember to bring it up later on. Because I think there's something I want to ask you about her as a... Yeah. I think I'll leave it at that for now.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You might know what I'm talking about, based on how the film goes, but
do you think, is she already changed at that point? Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, because it's like, on one hand, yes, and on one hand, no, but I don't know, because like, I'm not entirely sure, but.
I mean, to be fair, I mean, is she a plant all the way through? Is it actually the daughter? Is she, you know, you could go really find it, couldn't you, and say, well, she's just turned up. She could have killed the real daughter, or the real daughter might not even exist. Because it appears like this Cochran has, his spread's quite wide. There's no police in the town, so I presume he's paid them off. Or, well, obviously, it's a small town, so there won't be police there anyway. It's not as big as Haddonfield. It doesn't appear to be. Maybe. I've not thought about that. But again, it's a film that makes you want to watch it again, because I want to pick up the clues. Mm-hmm. So, because a lot of watching films now, not a lot, but I'd say half the time watching a new film now, it's like, yeah, it was okay. Probably won't watch it again. Mm-hmm. But this one, I'm like, yeah, I'll watch this again. So, mm-hmm. yeah, but it's a good thing to think about. The businesswoman next door, aka the doctor's real life, in real life. I actually, you know what? I haven't wrote this down, but when I was watching it, I was thinking, they're not going to have her turn the telly off and hear them in the room have them behind her. I really thought, oh, no. Thankfully, they didn't.
They did that quite well, as to not have that. That'd be a bit, yeah, cheap. And
it would have been a bit much. She finds a computer chip in the back of the logo, which is on, like, the back of all the masks. And this blue laser shoots her. Well, shoots her in the face. And then... like 4 hours later or something, according to the time, Mr. Cochran and all these suited guys turn up, carry her out. Although they were like, oh, she's okay, she's gonna get treatment, but she was wrapped up like head to foot, like she was dead.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, go on, mate.
I was just like, what? Was this your first time watching the film? What did you like? Were you kind of like taken back, like when obviously like cuts to like the laser beam, and Ellie's like, "What was that? Who cares?" And then it cuts back to her like revealing like this like burnt off face, and like I was like, when I watched that when I was the first time when I was younger, it was like, "Jesus, what the hell happened? What's going on?"
Well, I was thinking, what the hell is going on? And then I was disappointed we didn't get to see her face again. I thought they were gonna have it like, you know, like a bit like that film with Arnie in it, set on Mars, where the faces melt.
Oh, yeah, Total Recall, yeah.
Yeah, Total Recall. Yeah. I thought it was going to be a bit like that, you know, they cut to them, like, I don't care whether it's next door, I'm enjoying myself, and then, you know, her face is melting, and I thought they were going to go that way with it, but they didn't. But, and then, like, they take her off, you know, to be treated in the mask-making factory. Okay, we have a very good place. I'm like, do you really? Mm-hmm. But I think the doctor realizes like he's in over his head, and there's no point trying to argue at this point. Again, he rings up his the coroner's assistant and is like, what's going on? She's like, all I can find are rashes and car parts, someone's made a mistake, I can't find anything but wires and stuff. And then it turns out the homeless guy, turns out he was right, because there are listening devices kicking about. And again, I was thinking, because he's talking, the doctor's talking to the assistant on the phone, and you're thinking, again, you're thinking, what is going on? And then the girl, she goes missing because he leaves the door open, even though that's not going to stop him. And then you see like the clockwork, because you have that woman who's knitting, and he's like, where is the girl? And she's there knitting, and then you see like she's clockwork. And then he ends up punching through someone who's like yellow liquid comes out the mouth. I love that effect.
Obviously can't show real blood, even though there's bloody bits and other parts, but the robot blood has got to be yellow for some reason.
Orange concentrate, apparently. There you go. But I like it because it gives it that different kind of look. It's just something a bit different. I enjoyed that. And then I've got to say, the one bit that was like, oh my god, this is really kicking about now, like holy hell, which I've written down, was the pumpkin head scene. So I meant to say, sorry, earlier, when we meet the businesswoman and the guy
from
the
motel,
we also meet a guy who works for the company, who has been like, he's the best businessman, he's sold more masks across America or the world or whatever, and he's there with his wife and his little boy, who's about 9 or 10 or 12 or whatever he is. And he's got up and he's like, can I have one of these masks? And the kid's like, sorry for the accent again. And the Mr. Cochran, I'm not going to do Irish, I can't do it. he's like, yeah, of course you can, little buddy. Like, here, have this. No, you can't have one of those. They haven't been
final processing. Yeah.
And he's like, some of them get treated with highly volatile chemicals. What, then you put them over your face? And then he gives him one of the masks, and then they're in this little room, this cabiny bit. And then they just, this advert comes on that they're going to show at 9 o'clock. It's Halloween.
It's like that flash. It's like repetitive. And it's like, repetitive.
Oh, yeah, that bit. That's really good for tent building, isn't it?
Yeah. And so like the kids' masks starts melting and all this. That, again, seeing it the first time, like what is going on, like where are all these like snakes and crickets and all this other stuff coming out from the mask, like was it like how is this happening kind of thing. It's so strange, but you're like so like just taken in by it because it's so horrific to see that occurring.
Yeah. To be fair though, then the snake bites his leg, and that's a real snake. And I literally, that was the bit where I was like, oh, this is a bit, I cringed a bit. It was like, oh God. And I also thought, you know what? Snakes are underused in films. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, but like real snakes, like attacking something. And that's a kind of primal fear for me that like, not, I think it's something that's like, yeah, you've messed up now.
Yeah.
You know, the wife, what happens to the wife? Oh, they think bugs go in her ear, don't they?
I think she passes out, and then I think, you just assume that, like, the snakes probably bite her, and so the dad as well. But yeah. The scariest part of this is the fact that, obviously, you don't generally, in horror films, maybe you do.
You don't tend to see kids get killed.
Get killed, exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I had this chat, I can't remember what the film we were reviewing was, but they showed a kid die in it. Mm-hmm. And I said the only other film I can remember it, because I hadn't seen this one, was the Shining sequel, Doctor Sleep.
Yeah,
like that's pretty brutal. I really enjoyed that film. I must review that at some point.
It's a really good film. Yeah,
but very, very rarely do they show like that kind of thing because it's very kind of taboo, obviously, as it should be. But but I did like the fact that they didn't take his mask off. They didn't have that. It was done in a way where it was like, yeah. It, again, with the film, the best bits are the implied bits, but the imply what's happened to his head, and of course the snakes start coming out, and it's like, oh Jesus Christ, what's going on here? Like it was horrific, nuts, and then you realise that this is going to happen to all the kids around the US, presumably, and then you see kids buying the mask, and then you remember from the right at the beginning, his kids have got the mask. It's like those shitty 99p ones are looking pretty fucking good right about now, And on the vision, and again, you get all these visuals of kids in different places, like Illinois and all over the place, which I felt was a missed opportunity not to have Haddonfield, Illinois, if I'm honest. I thought that would have been, maybe even a bit too much. I don't know.
Could have been a nice nod, wouldn't it? But yeah.
Yeah. You get that beautiful visual of like the masks in front of the sunset, which I think is on a lot of DVD covers and posters, and that was really cool. And then you get like, because apparently somebody asked the director years later, like, how can you have all this happening? And he was like, it's magic, which I quite liked. Because he doesn't need I don't want an explanation. There's a bit of Stonehenge there that they've stolen. Like, and the guy's like, and I did like the fact that I did like the fact that they were like, oh, you wouldn't believe the trouble it cost to get it here. I thought that I like that, because how are you going to get that on a plane?
Yeah,
or a boat and get it here?
And then just leave it at that and then carry on talking.
And then he says, you know, it's about the original Halloween, and it's about witchcraft and sacrifices and the festival of the Samhain, and and I thought, yeah, okay, fair enough. And then the original Halloween comes on, it's like the big giveaway at 9 p.m. And they've got her strapped up in like on a bed somewhere else in the factory. They've got him tied to a chair watching the original Halloween, as you do. And he decides to kick the TV. How ungrateful. And he throws his skull.
Perfectly throws the mask.
Apparently it took them hours to get that right. But the director said he just threw it once and it went straight on, but they were just messing about before filming. And he said it took us ages after that to get it, which is sod's law, isn't it? He escapes. He starts crawling through the vents. He goes, John McClane. And he wants to sabotage the broadcast because millions of kids are going to die. And I was thinking, this is good. I'm enjoying this. Like, these are really high stakes, considering you think it's this small little mystery about what's happened to her dad, like her dad, and you know, is it, who are these people, and what's this guy up to? And I just thought, yeah, this is pretty cool. He's of course trying to sabotage the broadcast. He drops loads of badges because he finds the chip as well, but doesn't shoot him for some reason because he doesn't mess about with it.
Drops loads of stuff down. It's like the raining thing and the lasers pew 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 going everywhere. Yeah. It's kind of comical, but yeah.
Makes them kind of malfunction. Then you end up with the villain realizes he's been beaten. He does this really cool
clap, 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 clap. Yeah.
As if saying, yeah, well done. And him, the doctor and whatever her name is, they get outside, they get in one of the cars, and he's like, are you okay? And he turns to her, she doesn't reply, and I'm thinking, what's up with her? Because I didn't see this coming at all, I'll be honest. Didn't see coming at all. She attacks him. I'm like, oh, crap, she's one of them. It's literally what I've written down. And I was thinking, and I remember thinking, oh, I was like, kill her, hit the tree. No, I was really invested in that point watching it. And then he decides, he's like, what do I do? And he decides to try and stab, and he gets on the phone. I don't know who he rings. And he's just like, well, do you want to go through this bit? Sorry, because I'm just talking loads.
No, that's fine. Yeah, so the very end, when he comes back to that gas station where he met that, obviously that guy who came to the hospital to see him,
I know you.
Yeah, kind of circles back around in a sense. It's like, oh, it's a matter of life and death. And then he kind of goes on to, like, the telephone company's like, you've got to turn them off on the being broadcast and stuff like. So he gets, like, one channel. I don't know how many channels he has.
He gets two to stop, doesn't he?
It's still on channel three, and it's like, stop it. And then it's like, the music's going on, and then it kind of fades out with, like, stop it, echo kind of thing. And then it's the credits, and it's like, oh. I mean, you know how it's going to end for everybody, and it's like, there's nothing you can do about it, and it's kind of like, it's a bit chilling in a way, kind of thing, like how.
Well, Tom Atkins, loads of kids are dead.
And
a few adults, but apparently Tom Atkins said that he hopes at least that he managed to save his family and a few people, and you know, a couple of 100,000 people, with the fact he managed to stop two of them. But I love his conversation, because it's like as realistic as you could be. At that point, he's like, tell him it's a bomb, I don't care. And it's like, would you just be like, look, you know.
I don't have any proof or anything. Like, just, you've got to believe me. Kind of old shtick, but it's like.
We interrupt this program with like a malfunction or something. And then, because apparently the film didn't do very well at the box office, hence why John Carpenter, Deborah Hill walk away from, well, John Carpenter was originally going to do Halloween 4, but whatever, didn't do it in the end. And that goes that way. But apparently the book, the novelization, became a bestseller the point where it was like republished, I think, 10, 12 years later or something. And apparently at the end of that, he's failed. And the book ends with like millions of kids around the country and the world screaming. And it's like, oh, that's pretty dark. Which in a film, I think, works really well. In a film... Oh, that would have been a bit rough. I prefer the way they did it.
Yeah, to end out sort of ambiguous, but you kind of feel like you know the outcome, sadly. And then I think that's kind of in the same sense, it's also kind of a resolve in that way, because you know what's happened. It's not like Michael Myers, he's going to come back, and the kind of sequel bait in it kind of thing. Whereas this isn't, it doesn't really need to go any further. And that's that. It's either happens or it doesn't. And that's that. Yeah.
Yeah. So at this point, Paul, I think we'll come to the last few bits of feedback, and then we'll do what you thought, and then what I thought.
Yeah.
Hopefully any people are still listening. Either will be. We've got Pete from Middle Class Film Class. How's it going, Pete? Who put, not a fan. I heard all the love for it recently and gave it a shot. Interesting idea, but terrible protagonist. The actor does a fine job, but his character is someone I would never root for. I thought that was interesting. What do you think of that, Paul? Because I don't really agree. I mean, he's not going to make your top 10 characters ever, but I certainly rooted for him.
Yeah. And by the end, I think probably initially the fact that he's kind of a bit of a player, really, kind of thing, and he's thinking, oh, what an asshole kind of thing. But then he genuinely cares, like, for the safety, and he will, you know, put his neck out to try and solve this mystery and everything. Yeah. I think that. So I don't.
Oh, God, yeah, because he rings his wife, doesn't he? I forgot that.
Yeah.
He rings his wife and he's like, take the mask off. She's like,
I'm not drunk.
You've been drinking. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Which is exactly the reaction you'd get. I love how she's like, where are you? But okay, you know. But sorry, anyway. Sorry, any more thoughts on the as the guy's character? Sorry, the doctor.
No, I think I'm going to just explain. Like, he's at the beginning, you're kind of like, oh, why am I rooting for this guy? But by the end of it, you're there with him, really, like just trying to get everything resolved. But
I think he like, for me, he holds the film all the way through. Like, the villain, Mr. Cochran, is pretty good. But I like the fact that, you know, you root for him, and he holds the film together. Because if he, for me, if the Doctor character is no good or miscast or whatever, this film's just unwatchable, because he's your through line all the way through it.
True.
For me, so I think that would have been a real struggle. But, you know, hey, Pete, if that's what you felt like, you know, you can't be helped. Sometimes, for whatever reason, films don't land for you, do they? Yeah, I mean, I've got loads of examples, but I won't I won't go back over them again. But cheers for the feedback, Pete. Joe Bridges put, it's the best after the original. They went for a 50s/60s style horror movie and excelled at the highest level. It's just simply not a slasher, and people can't seem to handle what it is. Yeah, that's pretty fair, I think.
Yeah.
I do agree it went for that kind of 50s, 60s, almost like The Blob, or, you know, in the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yeah.
Or The Day the Earth Stopped or Stood Still, whatever it is.
Stood Still, yeah.
Stood Still. Sorry. I always do that. I always get that one wrong. And yeah, I do get that it went for that kind of that level, but with like a beautiful 80s coating, which I quite like. But I think at the time it would have been a bit of a shock, to be honest. And maybe that's why it didn't do as well as people were expecting.
Mm-hmm. I think watching some of the extras and stuff, I think that or something somewhere, but it kind of looked like on the rankings back in the day, like Halloween 3 was below Halloween 5. So it's like,
That's unfair.
Yeah, considering what Halloween 5 is, but... I think it's got, like I say, for most people now, it's certainly been more of a cult kind of following with what it is. So, yeah.
I mean, yeah. Oh God, is Halloween 5 the whole, oh, Michael, you're just like me, and he's crying. Is that 5?
I think so. You know, I think I haven't seen 6, so I'm guessing it's that one. And sorry, to go off a tangent Halloween 5. I was so annoyed how that ended, because like I wanted to know like what happened at the end of that, and it's like, but I haven't got 6 to watch now, so I've got...
Oh, 5's the one that just ends where that guy breaks at the police station.
Like, who's that, that guy? Yeah. And it's like, I want to know who that is, but like, I don't have...
They don't tell you.
No.
They don't tell you. It just doesn't go anywhere. It does not go anywhere.
Okay.
I'm sorry, Paul, but I don't want you to watch 6 and be like, oh, I'm waiting for it. I'm sorry, I'd rather just let you down gently now as a friend and say, look, doesn't go anywhere.
Thank you for help. Yeah.
Honestly, 6 isn't a 6. The only thing I say about 6 is the mask is a lot better, because in 5 it's an absolute disgrace. 5 it looks a lot better, but the film is just awful. Mm-hmm. It starts off and I was literally like, am I watching the right film? Have I flicked on like this, you know, some random channel on Freeview? What's this?
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that's Paul Rudd. Oh God, he can't act. And then you've got, you know, it's dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. I mean, this is what I mean. When people say, oh, Halloween Kills or Ends, I mean, say what you want about Ends, but and I haven't reviewed it yet, I've seen it, but at least it goes to something different.
Yeah.
At least it goes, yes, we know this is going to be divisive, but we're going to go for it. And we're not just doing it to be divisive, we're doing it because really, like, we've had Kills where he just goes nuts, and now we're going to have this slightly different tale about...
Yeah.
You know, I liked it anyway, but I'll come to that when I review that at some point. But people who say like 5 and 6, I'm like, oh, you're off your head. Like, people who say those are like better than Halloween and Halloween Kills and whatnot, I'm like, no, you're kidding yourselves. You really are. But entitled to your own opinion, but don't try and convince me of that fact. And then last but not least, Matt Spectro from Through the Multiverse podcast said, it's so batshit insane and stupid that it's almost good, lol. My favourite part is when Tom Atkins calls the TV stations, raving like a lunatic to not run the Silver Shamrock spot. And inexplicably, at least one of the stations listens to him, which I suppose is true. Actually, Matt, it's 2. So, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, yeah, I just thought that was pretty funny. But I thought it was a good comment to kind of for the last one. Do you think the fact that it was so different from Halloween 1 and 2 was part of its... the fact it didn't do very well?
It must be, really. But again, this is obviously at a time when, in retrospect of how things were, like sequentially, you would expect, oh, Halloween 3 is coming out, I'm going to see that and expect Michael Myers. Whereas obviously years and years have passed by and it doesn't really matter as much anymore. Because...
Well, it was only a year after Halloween 1.
Mm.
Halloween 2.
Two.
Halloween 1's 1978. Halloween 2, Rick Rosenthal, is 1981. So this is only a year after.
Mm-hmm.
So I can kind of, That's what I meant to ask you a minute ago. See, the DVD extras I had was just the trailer. And I watched the trailer and it was like Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, The Night No One Came Home. And that was it. Didn't show you anything. And I was like, well, if that's what you're showing people, then no wonder people turn up and were like, what the hell is this? Because it kind of reminded me of, stick with me on this because it's a weird example, but it makes sense. Remember Demon Barber of Fleet Street, Sweeney Todd?
Mm-hmm.
And that came out at the height of Johnny Depp, like in terms of he'd done Pirates. He could do no wrong at that point in terms of his films, right? And I remember when that was trailered, because I was watching all sorts of films then, they did not tell anybody it was a musical. And I didn't know it was a musical. I didn't go see it. But apparently a lot of people went to see it, thinking it was going to be this really dark, you know, story about this guy who kills people, puts them in pies and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was a musical, and people were like, what the hell is this? And I think that negatively affected how people perceived it. So my question for you is about the DVD. Well, sorry, do you have any like points on that?
Yeah, well, I think it's sometimes a common occurrence when, and I still do it today, to be honest, with how they do trailer advertisements. They sucker you in to do like, that's how they draw you in. Because, oh, that looks great. Like how they put that together and stuff like that. There's a trailer I saw a while ago. I think it's something in Venice or something. There's like I don't know if it's like a Poirot type thing, but it's like a horror based. I kind of forget the name of what the film's called, but something in Venice. But it's like a detective thing, but it was done like in a horror, like as if like, you know, a séance type thing. I remember. I don't know if it's because Sophie was with me when we were watching the trailer at the cinema, and she was like, oh, she's getting really scared by it. And I was feeling scared because the trailer was done so well. But I bet if I went to see that in the cinema, I'd be like, oh, this isn't what I was promised kind of thing.
Was it a haunting in Venice?
Yes, I think that was it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the new worm. It's a new Poirot one, isn't it?
Yeah.
With Branagh in it. Yeah. No, I've not seen any of them yet.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know like if this is a sequential thing or whatever, but just by that looks like that could be great, but I'm scared to go into it thinking and then not getting what I'm promised.
Yeah,
like a lot of films, like I think Jurassic Park, the last one was again probably done in a way that's kind of Fallen Kingdom as well, probably the same kind of thing. It's like where you know this isn't what I was promised by the studio. And
I don't know why they do it. I do not know why they do it. I mean, why not just be honest with us about what it is? Because people could probably respect it more if you did that. Trailers either show you too much or show
I hate that as well. When they just like they tell you the entire film, it's like, why am I gonna see it now?
Yeah, what's the point? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you just think what's the point of that? But my question about that is in the DVD extras you watched, were there any more trailers? And because I'm just wondering if that was the only one. Because that's the only one, then I genuinely understand maybe that's why people were like, what's this?
Yeah, I didn't check out the like. It says theatrical trailer. I didn't.
Oh, that was the one I had. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. It says TV spots and radio spots as well on the disc. But I was.
You could have a. It's 5 days till Halloween. 3 comes out.
Yeah. So the other stuff was like just more like audio commentary, and then like a making of Halloween where it had like some of the obviously like Tom Atkins and Stacey Nelkin come back to just talk about the film a little bit, like how their experience with it and kind of stuff like that. So it was kind of interesting, but most of the stuff I kind of already sort of knew really from it. But
cool.
Yeah.
But no, I enjoyed it. I think my verdict on it was like it's like an invasion of body snatchers. I know I've said that a million times. Type film. I found it really effective and an interesting mystery. The practical effects really hold up. Yes, there's a little bit of odd CGI at the end. Well, no, I think it's CGI. In fact, I think it's more matte painting and that kind of
thing
in terms of the building burning. But I like the way it looked. It didn't look real, but I like the way it looked. A little bit like I have a real thing for in films, I have a thing for matte paintings. Mm-hmm. Like I think they look absolutely beautiful. Yes, you can see them.
Yeah.
But they look like beautiful, and I appreciate the effort that's gone into them. So, like the end of Die Hard 2, for example, where you see all the planes on the runway is one that springs to mind.
Yeah.
I like them. I don't know why we don't use them more. It's like, oh, let's shove some CGI in it. No, let's not. Let's film a bit of real something and then have a bit of a matte painting, extend it or whatever. You don't need to anyway. Because that'll stand up far better than the CGI will, in my eyes, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If it's whatever is caught on camera, isn't it? And it stays there as it is, no matter what. So
exactly. Especially now with, I mean, I don't have as, like, I know you like love the, is it the 4K films you get? Or the...
Yeah, 4K. Yeah, big fan of 4Ks, yeah.
And, you know, yeah, I think sometimes it probably shows up a bit more now that they can get that much definition, but then you accept that going in. Mm-hmm. You know that it was never meant to look that clear, so they can get away with stuff. Yeah.
So, like I said, when I said about before, about like the mask, like with the guy having his eyes gouged out, and it's like, yeah, you can totally tell that's a mask. But again, yeah, they weren't thinking that way ahead of that, however many years ago, yeah, in the 80s and all that kind of stuff. So you just got to take rough with the smooth and just go. If you're enjoying the film for what it is and you can overlook those kind of like minor details, then there's no problem, is there, really?
No. And, you know, you accept the fact that the time and effort that was put in to make the film, and mm-hmm. you know I've got someone I know who does computer design in terms of making thing, you know, making things easier, mm-hmm. And it takes a hell of a lot of, it's very time consuming. Like I'd love to figure out the costs. Well, I wouldn't. I'd love to be told the cost differences and figure it out that way, because mm-hmm. it cannot be cheaper than doing it for real. I mean, anyway. Because the amount of time it takes to like render something, you know, even if it's just a sword or a hammer and you put all the details in it and you got to go back in, you know, make the light hit it correctly and this, that, and the other. And you think, mm-hmm. And then it's got to interact with its environment properly. You think, hang on, the right weight and all that kind of stuff. And you think, how on earth, like for a sword, so how can this be right? So I'm not saying mm-hmm. there's no effort in CGI, because there is. But I think too often now it's used it's not cheaper, but it's used as a quicker get-out clause of, oh, well, we can fix that later. Whereas, like, back then in the 80s and even the early 90s, and if you're Christopher Nolan, you're kind of saying, well, look, I don't have any of that stuff, so mm-hmm. I'm going to use cardboard cutouts, this, that, and the other, and I think those films hold up far better than anything else. But Halloween 3, I think, my ending thoughts when, you know, when it ended was, you know, do you know what? That was bloody good, that. That was genuinely what I thought. Oh, bloody good, that. I enjoyed it. And then I was really excited to talk about it, and I had people's feedback, and I thought, we'll throw this in a bit. I knew I'd have a good chat. So, I mean, what about yourself? Is watching it again, do you notice different things? Obviously, it's the first time I've seen it, so having, like, repeat viewings of it, does that change anything, or do you notice other things?
Not dramatically, no, but it's one I keep coming back to. I can't really say how many times I've probably seen it now, because the first time I've seen it was probably, I think it was like a recording on like a digital box thing I had when I was younger. That's how I did a lot of my early days of like what discovering films and stuff. I didn't have the DVD or the Blu-ray, so getting the 4K, I must have seen it on like a streaming service or on TV or something before that, or the fact that it kind of like stuck in my head as being like something that really like drew me in from all those years ago, and it's like the memory's still there of like, oh, I know how this is going to end, and I want to see, like, revisit it, like, see if it still holds up, and I feel like it still does, and it's kind of like, let's say, like a really solid like horror film, sci-fi horror, whatever you want to call it, and just because it has Halloween 3 at the start, just don't hold that against it. Just go think of it as just Season of the Witch, and you're in for a good time, really.
Yeah, they should have taken the 3 off.
Yeah,
take the 3 off.
Mm-hmm.
Halloween, Season of the Witch, you know, and that would have worked. I mean, because having the 3 there makes it feel like it's part of the same thing.
Yeah.
If they'd have been like Halloween, Season of the Witch, it'd have been like, okay, this is something a bit different. But who knows? But it was not warmly received when it first came out, by all accounts, when you have a read and have a look at it. But it seems to be one of those films that's kind of gathered itself a bit of a cult following. But I was really happy because of how well it stood up and how much I enjoyed it, because I'd seen, and especially on, you know, the comments I've had from people, or the podcasts that I know, that they were all saying, oh, we really enjoyed it. And a lot of people enjoy it. Not everybody, it's not universal. And I thought, oh, cool. Well, if these guys are saying it's pretty good, then it's at least got to be, you know, you said it's good. I thought, well, it's at least got to be decent then. given like me and you have done films like Dog Soldiers, we did Evil Dead on Film Fungus, which will be out some point in 2025, I should think. and sorry, Ben. And yeah, so it's you do kind of. I thought, well, it's got to be decent then, because like these are people I know. They don't have like they've got standards, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I thought, well, it's got to be good, and I enjoyed I thought, oh, this is pretty good, and I really enjoyed it, and for what it was. But I do think it's important to when you're going into it, do not just forget it's part of the house. Like, well, because it's not. Just think of it as like John Carpenter went off and did another horror film.
Yeah, like a spin-off. Yeah, kind of thing. Yeah.
Because it's kind of what it is, but because it didn't do very well, and I think the studios, well, he saw his rights because, anyway. Mm-hmm. I think because of that, because it didn't become part of this extra lot of films, this Halloween anthology series, it stands on its own, which is a good thing, but also not, because if it was in a run of like two or three other films that were also like, other, you know, Halloween and One Looked at the Devil and or whatever, it would make more sense. It'd be like, oh yeah, well, there's Halloween and then there's these extra ones over here. But yeah, I think it's good. And I think people, if you haven't seen it, I'd say certainly check it out.
And also check out the soundtrack as well. If you enjoyed the film, then I think that it's on Spotify, I believe. Yeah. So if you like a bit of synth, kind of like that kind of in the mood for that kind of thing, especially for maybe a Halloween party or something, you probably, so a bit different, it would probably go down pretty well, I think, for like a synth soundtrack.
Yeah. And for a film purely about Halloween, I don't think you can go far wrong.
No, definitely not. Really it's very much in the spirit of it, because obviously it's like for that kind of thing, you know, wearing a mask and going trick-or-treating type of thing. But I know you don't solely focus on like seeing all the kids out and about as such, but it's definitely in the theme, and obviously like what about Hallows Eve and the whole theme behind like the mythology of it kind of things ties in nicely.
Yeah. Oh, it really does, and it's a shame they never got a chance to explore it. And I would say, oh, maybe somebody should give it a go, but I don't think they should. please don't. I think, have you got any other points, any other notes that would it, I think we've pretty well gone through that one, to be honest.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Yeah, cool. But it's been good to talk about, because it's like I know Sophie's watching. We wouldn't do an episode on ourselves, so it's good to talk about it with somebody else who's again, like you've seen it for the first time and getting your initial thoughts on it, I suppose. Yeah.
No, it was a good watch, and I thought, oh, it's going to be a good chat this.
Yeah.
So I was really looking forward to it. So how come you wouldn't do it on yours? Is it not Sophie's thing? Or is it films you've never seen?
No. We did watch it. I believe it was last Halloween, because I thought I just wanted to just to see it again, really. And I think I got this one in last year. It was, so it's like, oh, we'll just watch it, just like a light-hearted one, because I know it's not like too scary, because Sophie's not very good with the horror aspects of So God Help Her for this year, when we've got what I've got in store. But it was just like we'll just watch it just casually, and we don't really need to do an episode about it, and she can just play on the phone or whatever, and back, we shouldn't be too so super focused on it, and just kind of like see what it's like, really. Because again,
I was just gonna say, so considering, you know, I'm quite far ahead of myself for once, so this probably won't come out until Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
Around then, so what episodes and films have you got planned to do for Halloween, or have you got a couple of them, or
I've got to whittle down a few. There's so many on my shelf. I've got ideas, but I just don't know which. It's so many to choose from, but I want to kind of do ones that are kind of like maybe one like a supernatural one, like a slasher, folklore type ones and things like that. So I've got to think about that as well, and one for the patrons to pick as well. So yeah.
Oh, yeah, good thinking, yeah. So thanks for coming on, Paul. Would you like to tell everybody where you're from? Oh, also, if you didn't know, because I'll have to mention it, Paul has done four logos for me up to now. So we've got the original Review Yourself, not the original, the Review Yourself logo as of now, the Defend It Yourself, the Visit It Yourself, which, to be fair, I love the logo, but I don't think that series is going to go on anymore. Long story. And also the Preview It Yourself. The first episode of which was all about the last voyage of the Demeter, which it turns out hasn't been released in the UK. So cheers to that, Universal. Much appreciated. so never mind. But yeah, so Paul does great artwork as well. If you'll know that if you follow his podcast. Because whenever I see his episode titles, I'm like, oh, damn it. I'm jealous of those. Each episode. So, yeah, I would recommend his work wholeheartedly. But would you like to tell a bit where you, like, where they can find you, what your podcast is all about?
Yeah. So our podcast is called SP Film Viewers, and it is a bit of a balance of me introducing my wife, Sophie, to films that she's never seen before, watching for the first time and sort of getting a reaction depending on whether it's, you know, a classic or something that's really just funny and sort of a bit of a laugh. And then we also kind of like every other week, like bi-weekly, is something neither of us have seen. So like a maybe like a classic film that was still haven't got around to seeing Citizen Kane yet, and that's been on the shelf.
Nor have I. I've got Casablanca sat there to watch. I've got some classics I need to watch.
That's good. Yeah. So yes, yeah, so that's how we balance it. So every other week is kind of like one of those two type things, and then we have these like birthday specials where we do like three films in a row kind of thing. We cover all sorts really. So there's probably something for everyone. Like, you know, there's like Back to the Future, The Matrix, and then kind of obscure ones like.
Oh yeah, you did Superbad not long ago, which I really enjoyed, by the way. I absolutely love that film. But no, it's a good mix because especially the ones where she's not seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
Like she brings such like an, I can't think of the way to describe it, like such an innocent outlook on it. Like she's never seen it before, and obviously you've seen it and you like it. Yeah. On the ones, those ones, and then you've got all your stuff to bring with, and she's just like, I love sometimes where she just asks the question and I'm like, yeah, that's a fair question to ask. I say, well, why would you do that? And I'm like, yeah, that's a fair question to ask.
Yeah,
so exactly. Yeah, yeah. Just a viewer's, a listener's viewpoint on it. So
yeah, but you can find us on all of major podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify and Podbean, and so you to follow us on social media and stuff, you can just type in SP_film viewers, and we're on Instagram, Twitter, Threads now as well, and stuff like that. So all under the same handle, so it's quite easy to find. So yeah.
Yeah. So if you want to find review yourself, the podcast with the sigh, we are on Instagram, Review It Yourself Podcast 2021. We're also on Twitter, it's @yourselfreview. Yeah, that's about it. No politics, no pandering. Absolutely no point for this one. But no, thanks a lot for coming on, Paul. I really appreciate it. And yeah, no thank problem. You. Thank you to all the guys who responded through Twitter and put in those comments, because it's added quite a bit to the review as well. Because, you know, I thought people would be like, oh, it's great. But actually, but all of them were a really good take on it. Some of them gives you a different insight. Because to be fair, when you read a title like Review It Yourself, you probably expect it to be more than me rambling on. Because there was an idea at one point to make it a bit more like that, but it's hard to get that much feedback to make it work. So who knows? Maybe in the future I can do more of this. But I have enjoyed looking at other people's views. So that's been good. So thanks once again for the people for commenting. And I hope you've enjoyed the episode. And I think I have mentioned everybody, I think. So no, thanks for listening, and thank you once again to Paul for joining me.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Thanks everyone. Cheers.
Get it in, get it on, and enjoy the vlog.
Welcome to Film Vloggers.
Oh, harder, Daddy.
The only film review podcast, thankfully, that poses the question. Does watching this film feel like flogging a dead horse?
There he is, beating that dead horse!
Introducing your hosts. First up, her Irish potty mouth turns the air a whole new shade of blue. It's Fiona! Say hello, Fiona.
And why the f*** is Dan Macca's doing our intro?
I want me gold!
That's great. It's great. She's adorable. And your second host needs no introduction. The man, the myth, the legend. Like, I said I'd do this. I said I'd do this for you. I'm not reading this. It's the guy who waffles too much. It's Ben.
Cooey!
I'm making waffles.
So what are you waiting for? Grab your whip, mount your dead horse, and let's get on with the vlog, shall we?